having that good relationship with your property manager is essential in some of these conversations, because it's counterintuitive, like we said, right? Like, hey, we're going to do this. I know it seems counterintuitive, but here's the plan. And being able to take that advice and being, I guess, humble enough to be like, you know, not be like, oh, I do this for a living. Yeah. You know, like,
yes.
Anyway.
Like, hey, we're all trying to make money on the property, right? Yeah. Property manager is as well. And there's so many times where ego gets in the way.
Hi, I'm Wyatt.
And I'm Grace.
And you're listening to Our Dad and your host of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution Podcast. I'm your host, Sean Moore, and we're back with our Experts Corner interviews with short-term rental investors. Today, I've got the pleasure of talking to Mr. Cameron Christensen and Jason Brown. Thanks for joining me, guys.
Of course. Absolutely.
We get an in studio, in-person interview instead of on Zoom, and so it's fun. You guys are local to Utah, so it's fun. You had a little bit of a drive to get up here, but not horrible, right?
Yeah, about an hour or so.
Yeah.
Not too bad.
I appreciate you coming in. So this is going to be fun. So you guys, I know that our listeners love these episodes more than any other episode because we get the most downloads on these, so we know that. And it's because you guys are willing to share your journey into short-term rental investing, obviously. Our goal at Vodacy is to help people walk into this with their eyes wide open. And by doing so, we have these kind of conversations and let people listen in. And it hopefully helps them learn some lessons, things to avoid, things you wish you would have done different, and all of that. But before we start, I always like to get the background, kind of where, like, what pays the bills, what your background is, your guys' relationship, why you decided to do this together as a partnership. And let's start there, and then we'll dive into the short-term rentals.
Sure, absolutely. We both work in tech. I work at a software company as a product manager, just really interfacing between customers and our company, trying to build a product, earn it more money, help the customers earn more money, all of those things. So that's my background. I've kind of been on a journey of trying to find more, right? Like my day job, it is my day job. It pays the bills. We're very blessed, but it's not as fulfilling as I want it to be. Mm-hmm. And so I've been looking for something to really do and kind of to branch out, to build something of my own and you know, be self-reliant. And so that's what initially got me interested in this. And then it kind of leads into our partnership. So I'll throw it over to you and let you kind of do your spilling.
Yeah, so background-wise, I work in tech. My background's actually in accounting, but I've kind of transitioned to database work now. And so I support accounting and finance groups. And at some point in the past, well, we've been talking about this for a long time. We've been friends since seventh grade. We're neighbors. We don't have a fence between us, right? And so, you know,
our kids fight like siblings. The whole thing.
So we have a great relationship, but like you've always been told, don't ever go into business with your best friend. Don't ever go into business with family, right? And so, there was a little bit of hesitancy there. But what happened was a couple years ago, I was kind of in a similar place where I was like, okay, I'm doing all the things that the financial advisors will tell you. I'm setting up my 401k. And I start to look at it and I'll look at it every 6 months or once a year or something. And I'll be like, man, that's not growing that fast.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, and they say, well, yeah, that's because all the interest, you know, the way that compound interest works is it all at the tail end, right? You know? And I'm like, well, I don't want to wait till I'm 60 before I start to see that swing. And so, that coupled with as my income has grown over the years, I've noticed the tax liability has gone up as well. So what really got it going was a couple years ago, I thought I had like planned out this tax. I get stock options where I work, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought I'd, you know, waited till the long-term capital gains. But then because I waited and did a whole chunk all at once, I got hit with an extra tax that I didn't even know about, a net investment tax or something, and I go to him and I'm just like so mad. I'm like, I waited for the capital gain, the long term, and then I get this extra 4% or whatever it was, and so it's like almost like it didn't matter. And I'm like, we need to find a way to stop paying so much taxes. So that's kind of what led us to, you know, get into the short term rentals specifically, is because of the loophole and offsetting W-2 incomes. So we've always wanted to be in St. George, like have a rental place. When we were in college, we're like, oh, how awesome would it be to be down there? But we're both risk averse people, right? And so we've kind of waited to take the step until till now.
And so that risk aversion, right, we started talking about it, and he brought it up, and I'm like, yeah, I'm ready to go, right? Because I've been on this journey of looking for something. I'm ready to go. But we, again, being risk averse, we're like, we need to start talking to people.
Yeah.
And so we started talking to people down in St. George saying, hey, we started hearing, oh, it's tough. Like, we never pay the mortgage. We do all of this. And we're like, well, that doesn't seem like a great plan, right? Yeah. Like, we don't want to pay for this ourselves or have to have this extra liability. So we started doing research. And as you start doing research, we start getting ads for Sean and Vodacy. Yeah. And that's really, we started listening to the podcast. I think that we even started looking at places, and I think we even, you know, the DataSense course, we bought that first, and we started running numbers. And I think within a few weeks of finding you all, we were on a call, we were signed up, we were ready to go. And from there, it's just really been a whirlwind, right? We had already kind of found a place. We kind of already underwrote it. And we came up here, I think, to meet with y'all. Yeah. And we had the place, and we said, let's look at this. And that's, you know, that's the place we ended up putting an offer in and buying, because it was a good place to start. Yeah.
Yeah, and it was, and it's interesting because you guys are pretty young. You're a lot younger than I am. But it's a lot of times when you follow the rules and you cross the T's and dot the I's and put your money where you're supposed to on retirement funds and everything else, and you start to look at it, you guys realized pretty early that that wasn't going to work, you know, as well as we had been sold that it was going to work, right? And you know, a lot of people don't realize that until they're closer to my age, right? And they're, you're, you know, you're mid-40s, mid-50s, and somebody's saying, and you're looking at it saying, man, I've been doing this for 20 years, and I was sold that it should start growing again. And a lot of people are like, man, I'm 10 or 15 years away from retirement, and it's not going to work. I can tell now it's not going to work. So it's nice that you were able to recognize that early on, that there are different avenues. Now, everything has pros and cons, though, right? Including short-term rentals. Every market has pros and cons. You guys are invested in a market that I actually own a property in, but I bought it a long time ago, and my basis is a lot different than your basis, right? And you remember when you're underwriting them, I said, hey, listen, we want St. George. We got to be pretty diligent, because it's one of those markets that it's a high acquisition cost market versus the revenue you can generate in other markets. But you realize that, hey, listen, doing this, if we're going to do it and we follow a process and we really dive into it very intentionally, you realize not every property is going to work, not every process is going to work, but also there are ways to make it work, right? And I think that you guys, instead of just buying into what everybody was saying on the outside, you started to really do your own research. And I always tell people that. And I'd love you to talk a little bit about that research and the conversations you had amongst yourself when you're doing some of that research, because you're hearing both sides of the story, right? You're hearing, let's talk to people down there. And I would guess, if I was venturing to guess, 80 to 90% of the people down in St. George don't make money with their properties, and they're not even break even with their properties. And so, you know, that means that there's a lot of people that are not doing it correctly because their basis is too high, right? And if you're going to dive in, and you guys did, to your credit, and we'll, you know, all these conversations, when people are listening, you guys can go check out Cameron and Jason's property in the show notes and go look at the recipe that they followed and see the difference in what it looks like to be able to go down to a market that's fairly crowded. Not a major, it's not like a Destin or a Smokies, you know, in the Smokies or the Blue Ridge. It's not quite that crowded, but it's a crowded market. It's not a small market, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a high acquisition cost market versus the revenue that's generated down there. So take me through some of that research a little bit, because there's a lot of people right now, and you guys were attracted to short-term rentals for the tax reasons. Well, we just had the big, beautiful bill was passed, right? And 100% bonus depreciation is back, and it's permanent. And a lot of people's feeds are going to be inundated with a lot of people talking about just go buy one of these properties, and you can save a lot of money on taxes, which all of that's true. The problem is that's a one-time event, and then you have to own this property for the long term, right? And so I always am nervous when I see something like this, because there's a lot of turnkey options and just go buy the property. And sure, you're going to get this big tax savings if you do it correctly and you qualify and everything else. But what if you buy a property that negative cash flows after that every single year and you didn't follow the process, or you didn't buy in a good market? Because you guys were similar in the situation of what got you interested in, especially Jason, when you had that tax bill on the you know, the stock options, you're like, dude, camera, we got to do something different, right? Right. And a lot of people are in that position right now, and they're thinking, hey, this is my way to avoid those taxes. True, but this is a long-term asset, right? Yeah. There's more than just the tax savings. So take me through some of those conversations.
Yeah, so I think when we started looking, we were looking for like just a place is like, okay, well, you know, we're going to travel together probably, so we need something with four bedrooms and two baths or, right, you know, something like that, right? And the way that we do underwriting, we started looking at those and realizing there is no way we can even come close to breaking even in most of the markets or the submarkets down in St. George at that level, right? But we found a place that has six bedrooms, five baths, and we started looking at that, and we said, you know what? It might actually be possible, you know, with this specific property. Again, yeah, it wasn't every property that was this, yeah, but it was this specific property with six bedrooms. There aren't as many, and we might be able to hit a break-even point there. And so we really started focusing on, okay, let's go bigger, right? Which helped us with, you know, like we're going to identify with that target market, yeah, because that's who we are. We're going to travel together. We're going to bring our families sometimes, or, you know, our extended families, and we're going to travel in a big group and have a multi-generational sort of thing. And so that's really where the underwriting pointed us was, hey, if you're going to break even in this market, it's got to be a specific property and it needs to be a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm thinking back to like when we originally started talking about doing this and what our goals were. I think one of your first lessons is to talk through your goals. Yeah. And we were a little bit different there, mm-hmm, right? Cameron's looking for something to eventually replace his W-2, mm-hmm, right? And that wasn't a priority for me. Sure, I love it, right? But like, mm-hmm, I was more looking for a way to diversify my wealth, have, yeah, some tax saving things like that. And then also the lifestyle aspect, right? And so, going into it, we knew that St. George was our preference, but looking at it, I'm like, there's gonna be no cash flow down here. And so we had to kind of reconcile that at first. Mm-hmm. And what ultimately I think ended up, what we realized is, as we listened to you more, it's not just about one property, it's about starting to build, you know, a portfolio. And our goal is, you know, maybe five within, you know, 5 years. But
we also knew, like, we can't do this somewhere else. We need to do it somewhere close and somewhere we have a passion for and learn the process so that we can then go do it somewhere else that, right, maybe, exactly, we aren't as passionate for. Yeah. So it'll keep us interested. It'll keep us engaged. We're, you know, close, 4 hours away, so we can get there fairly easily and learn the process, right? Yeah. And so that's where our compromise came and our partnership was like, look, we're not going to cash flow. But you know what, that's okay. We're going to learn the process. We're going to do this. And that's going to enable us down the road,
yeah,
to be able to accomplish, yeah, some of my goals, you know, and we'll accomplish his goals. And, you know, it was just reconciling that and having good conversations about that.
Yeah. We didn't want the first one to turn us away from it. Right. And it was kind of like, we'd been talking about it or saying, oh, how awesome would it be? You know, we'd been doing that for years. And I was like, it's time to finally get our feet wet. Right.
Yeah.
We got to get in there.
Right.
And so we might not be able to go as fast as we thought, you know, we're, yeah, not going to get a property, you know, one property every year, but at least we got the first one, yeah, and we're figuring things out and we're learning a lot. Right. But so that's kind of like how it began. And then again, with the underwriting, then it was like, okay, well, how do we convince ourselves that this is actually going to work? Well, we've got to go to a larger place because, mm-hmm, the 3 and 4s aren't underwriting 3 and 4 bedrooms. And then once we do that, it's like, well, now it's a necessity for us to partner on this because I couldn't go out and get that 6-bedroom place on my own and neither, right, could he, right? And so, yeah, that's kind of what led us that direction.
Well, and it's great that you mentioned because we always do start with, hey, what are the property goals? And one of the drawbacks of a partnership is your property goals aren't usually going to be exactly the same. They're, yeah, going to be a little different. And so we have to figure out, okay, and this is where the underwriting comes in that's so important is saying, hey, listen, a good property in that market is a break-even property. And knowing that, well, a break-even property can build wealth. And, you know, you've got the tax advantages, you got no pay down, people are paying that property off for you, you've got appreciation. but you don't have any cash flow to speak of, right? Well, that doesn't help pay bills for W-2, right?
Right.
So and when we know that, we have to say, okay, here's my property goals. Here's what this market looks like. Here's what a good property in this market looks like. Now, those markets have other benefits. Even though they're not high cash flowing markets, they are highly appreciating markets over time because they are, you know, there's an inverse relationship between cash flow and appreciation that a lot of people don't realize. And it is pretty much just across the board. You know, you can go buy a property and don't mean to pick on Cleveland, Ohio, but you can go pick a property in Cleveland, Ohio, and it's going to have a 20% cash on cash return on a long-term rental. Right, you're going to get 15, 18, 20% cash on cash return, but you're going to sell that property in 5 or 10 years for pretty close to the same price you bought it for, right? Mm-hmm. And so in the long run, in my opinion, the higher appreciating markets are way bigger levers for the wealth building journey. And then you also mentioned, okay, let's say we have the goal of one property a year every 5 years when we start, right? That goal is we talk about that. We call it our 5 years to freedom. Okay, duplicate a property one time one property that's good 5 years down the line, five different times.
Mm-hmm.
What happens is the gap between property number one and property number two is the longest gap, right? Because you're saying, okay, I got to save up for that next one. I don't have a lot of cash flow from the first one. I only have the one property operating, all these different things. And they're adding to that timeline of being able to qualify and put down payment money and set up money on that second property. The gap between property number two and number three starts to shrink a little bit. Three to four shrinks more. Four to five shrinks even less. And usually between properties, somewhere between property three and four, you will have this tipping point where you've got enough cash flow, you've got enough wealth built up that where all of a sudden you don't have to wait a year. You could, as soon as you're, emotionally and physically able to go set up another property, you can do it, right? And so what happens is it doesn't ever equal out typically, okay, every 12 months I'm adding a property to the line, but it does usually a lot of times, if that's the goal, equal to five properties in 5 years.
Right.
It's just your first property to second property might be 2 years.
Yep.
The second to third might be another year. So you're 3 years in. But then properties four and five stack up in the next 18 months, right? And so all of a sudden, they happen a lot faster. And so it's when you go through that process, you'll start to realize that. But then also, you'll start to, my guess is, look for different markets that might cash flow a little bit more, right?
Yep.
Have a little bit more of a balance between cash flow and appreciation and those types of things. And have the confidence to say, hey, listen, how did our underwriting look? Are we hitting the break-even mark? Did we project correctly what we were looking at? Because all those different things give us the confidence now to go do it again and really just keep parlaying, right? And so talk to me a little bit about the setup phase. So we talked about underwriting, understanding, kind of we know we want to go down here. You guys love that market as a whole, as a families. And we underwrote it, knowing that it's going to be breaking even, made some compromises on property goals, bought the property. Then we got to go through the setup phase. And there's this problem with me and Vodacy is we don't just throw furniture in there and put them together, right? And you hear us talk about all the Vodacy signature recipe and the custom artwork and really bringing these properties to life. But it is a daunting process, right? So take me through that.
Absolutely. Yeah, so we had a long road up to the setup phase, I would say. We bought it at the beginning of, about a year ago, beginning of June, and it was an STR before we bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And so our summer was completely booked out at a much lower rate than we would have done.
Mm-hmm.
But we didn't have the chance to get in. We had to honor those
right.
bookings. And so we, quote unquote, launched right when we bought it and had guests through the summer. And so we kind of started working on the design and understanding and, going through the course because we were on such an abbreviated timeline that we were using the summer to learn, really, and while we had this STR. And then we really started in earnest on the design and the setup in, I want to say, October, November.
Okay.
Because we didn't use the same property manager that the previous owner was using, so we used them. They launched, and we still just had the bland model house look, right? Yeah. And so we started the design, the setup, the design, and then
we probably started the design earlier.
Yeah,
designing. So we knew it was boring. We knew it needed a revamp.
It's the first thing we said when we got down there. This is boring.
Yeah. We're both like hands-on, get your hands dirty, do things yourself, and if you can save money, do it, right? Like
right.
Things are going out in our house and we're like watching YouTube videos and fixing it, right?
Yeah.
And so we're like, after we've gone through lessons, we're like, we can do this, right? And as we started to dive into Mike's section of the lessons, we started to feel a bit overwhelmed. We're like, holy cow, this is a lot, right? And the time was starting to stack up. And so we ended up deciding to do a pick the lock with Mike, and that just literally like unlocked everything.
Yeah.
Like he walked through with us, and his lessons are great, but like being in person and being able to ask questions and just have that tailored to us and our property. Mm-hmm. After that phone call, we were like, we're good. We're ready to go. And so, and we did. Mm-hmm. And so that probably started in June, July, you know, before. And then, but to go through a 6-bedroom property and to design it and to get like all the artwork that we wanted and stuff, that took a lot of time. We were in Photoshop, like
we learned Photoshop.
Yeah, like process, perfecting right? the photos that we were getting stock images, and then like adjusting them and getting them exactly how we wanted them for our property. And that took a long time.
Yeah,
a lot of late nights. A
lot of late nights. You know, credit to our wives who were, you know, we would go over and we'd say, okay, from 8 to 12 tonight, we are working on this, and sometimes 2 in the morning, right? We're like, we're doing this.
Yeah,
and. Jumping on Mike's calls a lot during the day and asking his advice and kind of just doing it. But in that process, again, 6 bedrooms, it was a lot, but we learned a ton, right?
Right.
But that was a huge, you know, going back to the partnership, that was a huge benefit of having a partnership.
For sure.
Is that big advantage, we both had a second job, but we're splitting the work between us, right? Yeah. Like you're taking care of this room, I'll take care of this room. We've got work at different times. So that was huge as well.
Yeah, so that was the beginning, and then the setup was then when you said kind of October, November, where we had gotten everything, and we used the case goods from the prior owner, right? Yep. So it was mostly just kind of adding
the artwork,
accessories, and the color, the rugs, that sort of thing. And we used Mike's Amazon lists, which were awesome, and we got all the stuff delivered to our houses and had to haul it down there.
You did.
Yeah. Just because with timing with guests and stuff, you know, it was just like so.
And we did that setup in 2 separate weeks. I think one in October or November, or no, probably one in October and then one in November. We just went down for a week. We worked our day jobs during the day because we didn't have the time off. And then at night, we were, you know, from 4 to 2 midnight, in the morning, we were putting up curtains and installing art and rugs and all sorts of stuff. So,
but a little tidbit, or I guess this helped. So back to the tax savings, you know, you need a material participate to make that work, right? This made that easily hit that easy. And I should mention, we're in a unique position as a partnership where we can't hit the 100 hours because it's 100 hours and more than any other one person, right? So in order for us to both take advantage of it, we had to hit 500 hours each. And so, you know, for other listeners who are like wondering about a partnership, you know, you can do it, but it's 500 hours each. And doing the design and setup ourselves, we blew past that. So, you know, that was
a win. And that's a really good point, especially right now, super timely when people are listening to this, because there's a lot of people that are wanting to take advantage of bonus depreciation. Well, because of the short-term rental loophole, allowing us to do that without being real estate professionals, you still have to materially participate. And as a partnership, the challenge is, okay, you both have to have 500 hours. It's a lot of hours, right? And which during a setup, that makes it doable, right?
Yeah.
And because even though that is a very time intensive part of the process, and you don't have to do that if you don't want to, you can hire it out. I hire mine out, right? But when you're both trying to gain 500 hours, you got to get them somewhere. Right. And so you're like, hey, listen, we can save some money. We can do this ourselves. We can gain our hours. It's going to be grueling and it's going to be hard for a few different weeks that we're down there, basically, you know, late nights and then 2 different install weeks. But when you're done, you're like, okay, that was probably pretty beneficial because you got a pretty good tax savings off of it, I'm guessing. Right.
Yep.
And so it was, so you did 2 different install weeks, right? did you take it offline the whole time during that period, or was did you have guests in between a lot of that stuff going on?
We had guests in between those. We did not take it offline. We blocked out the week, obviously, for us. Sure. We knew we were going, but we didn't take it offline. And that kind of leads to, I guess, maybe our next conversation where we, you know, got our own property manager at the beginning when we acquired. And then during this whole phase that we're setting up, we're working with this property manager to say, hey, this is what we're setting up. This is the experience. Yeah. We are an experience, and this is what we want. And we were asking questions. We were asking them to do some things, and we were getting a lot of pushback.
Sure.
Because they were a big company. They were probably, you know, one of the more well-known ones in the market. And we were like, hey, we want to do this. And they're like, oh, yeah, maybe, you know. And we were saying, well, we want to do it this way, and we weren't getting a lot. And so after we kind of set up, we started looking at other property managers. Right. Like, this isn't working.
Right.
And so we didn't take it offline because, I mean, frankly, I think we got less than 5 bookings in the 6 months we were with that company.
Yeah. And all of our income in 2024 was from the honoring the prior owner's bookings.
Okay. Yeah. Honoring so, what was there.
Yeah. Yeah. So that new property manager, you know, they spun up the page for our property June 1st, probably, or like beginning of June. And by the end of December, you know, they may be less than 5 bookings.
Yeah. Which wasn't super surprising, right? Like, it still looked like a model home. Yeah. You know, it was still kind of boring, but we were like, look, we know we're launching big. We're really launching in January. So we're like, we're just going to let it happen and see what happens, kind of give a proof of concept. But when it was clear it wasn't going to happen, we acted pretty fast. And we said, we need a new property manager. We went and found another one that was much more in line with what
we're trying to
do.
To maximize the asset. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And they've been great so far, and you know, even helping us on this journey because they see things a lot more like we do. So
Nice.
So then we made the move to property manager, which then is a full relaunch, right?
That's right.
Did you guys do the photo shoot yourself? How did you do the photo shoot? Did you guys go through and do that on your own, set all that stuff up on your while you guys were down there, or did you hire somebody to do that?
We hired someone to do that. Okay. Yeah.
We might have attempted it had we not just been coming off the tail end of the design and setup, right? Yeah. But we were burnt out.
Right.
And so we ended up using O2O from you guys, and they did a great job. And
I thought that they did that, but I just wanted to double check because we have members that will go through that same thing, reverse engineer it. We've got the training in there, how you do it, but that is another whole different, it's like a whole different learning curve, right? I mean, it's one thing to, you know, to roll up your sleeves and put up artwork and everything else, understand all that stuff. Now, all of a sudden you got to go learn photo, you know, setting these scenes and the shots you're trying to get and lighting and editing and all that stuff. So, so they came in, I'm guessing, before January, like somewhere in that, right after
December. You guys they were December. The first week of December.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Got that done. Got the new property manager. Launched it in January.
Yep. January 1, I want to say, we launched with the new property manager the new photos and new listing. So,
And so right after the holiday rush, going into not quite the peak season down there, this is the desert in Utah, which is down St. George by Zion National Park. So you guys listening, the peak season is really fall and spring, and the summer is okay, but it's really kind of the slower season. Summer's slow because it's so hot down there, but you still have a lot of people from Salt Lake that like to go visit in the summertime.
In fact, I would even say summer is great for our type of property.
Yeah,
because kids are out of school, families can travel together, so we actually this year we're seeing our best occupancy during these summer months because, you know, they're all out of school and they've planned their vacations.
Right. But our property is also in a resort style area. And so there's a pool and a clubhouse and all that. And so people love to go down and you know, do those water activities, right? Yeah. So even though our occupancy is high, the rates in the summer are lower.
Right.
Because it's hot, you know, and so people are paying lower rates. And so, I would say that's a way to, it is considered non-peak is because the rates are greatly reduced.
How was the launch? Because I'm curious, because the launch was, you launched right before the spring break season, which is a big season down there. A lot of tournaments are going on and people wanting, I mean, up in Salt Lake where it's cold, right? And we're like, we're really dying to get down to St. George. Like I told you guys, my favorite time down in St. George is the spring. How was the launch in the in that springtime season for you?
It was okay. Yeah. Like, we're definitely not, you know, like listening to the podcast and people are, oh, we launched and within a week we had 10 bookings or something. We weren't that.
Okay.
It was a lot slower. Typically, January is very slow.
Yeah.
And then you start seeing bookings come in February, yes. second week of February. We did start seeing that. We were obviously a brand new listing, right? So when we talk about, you know, being on Airbnb or the OTAs, we were brand new. We had no reviews.
Yep.
And so that is the thing I think that has slowed us down the most is that we are trying to get those reviews and we launched in the very slow, like, hey, we're not going to see a booking for 6 weeks because it's January. We'll start seeing.
January is the slowest month, I think.
That is right. Yep. Yes, yep. Absolutely. And so that was, I think, that we launched it probably the worst time with no reviews, right?
Right.
So
right.
we were okay during spring break and tournaments mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And we're hoping that next year it's much better because we've started getting those reviews. We've dialed
are
in the
Are they starting
experience.
To stack up? Reviews are starting to come in?
Reviews are starting to come in.
Okay.
Yep. And so they are starting to come in. So we're hoping to set up better for next year during that slower yeah. season and then moving into that peak March, April. So
So how when it comes to lead times, right, and you got a bigger property and – historically, lead times on bigger properties are further out. People yep. are booking them, planning them out further in advance. What we're seeing trending wise for the last year and a half, probably 18 months, is lead times are really shrinking. And so I'm curious down there for you guys, are you seeing most of your bookings coming 30, 60, 90 days out, or are they coming in within 30 days?
Yeah.
Have you paid attention to that?
We have. Yeah. So summer is definitely the 90 days are sticking, right?
Right.
Because, again, people are planning
yeah.
and saying, hey, we're coming down this time. The kids are out of school. We're traveling with multiple families. Got to coordinate that. So summer is definitely still 90 days
mm-hmm.
Or so. But I don't know.
Well, I would say a good chunk of summer is, but there's also the
we
summer
have
bookings
had some,
that,
yeah,
that are last minute that yeah. they'll book, right? But I mean, so we've got, you know, and some of the holidays in the fall
they
and like Thanksgiving and stuff, like we've got booked. And so we're still getting advanced bookings, but I think
event weekends, those are
yeah.
pretty far out, right? Mm-hmm. Like where you know that there's an Ironman and stuff like that. There's
but we're having gaps fill in last minute as mm-hmm. well.
Yeah.
Are you starting to adjust the prices up, or are you still in launch phase pricing?
Launch phase.
Still in launch phase.
Okay.
Yeah.
How many reviews do we have right now?
We've got 8 on Airbnb.
Okay.
So
where are you mostly getting Airbnb bookings?
Yes.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Which
yeah.
interesting enough, yeah, our property manager says, hey, in our community, they're really good on VRBO.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason,
our property
in this community is on Airbnb.
Is trending better on Airbnb.
Yeah, yeah.
You'll find that one platform or the other will far exceed the other one. And then all of a sudden the one's going to drop off.
Yeah.
Because it's really hard to optimize on two.
Yeah.
And so once you start to optimize and you start to see, okay, you're getting a lot of the bookings from Airbnb, it doesn't really matter which one you optimize on because they both have way more business than you can handle.
Right.
And they've got plenty of eyeballs, right? And so I always tell people, don't worry about which one it is. I always prefer Airbnb because I like the user interface better, but it's not that it doesn't really matter what you like better. It's just a matter of what you know, where's the consumer starting to optimize and book on. So if we're still in the launch phase pricing, what we would really want to do is get those, we need to get that velocity of reviews coming in. And if you've got that property manager that is willing to work with you, and they're willing to send out that kind of the law of reciprocity that we always do and send
yep.
out a guest review first. If they're doing that, that should really spike those reviews, the percentage of reviews you're getting. If they're not doing that, we want to get them doing that
okay.
as soon as possible.
Yep. We've definitely had conversations with them on that, and we're kind of staying on that. We're like, look, these reviews are important.
They are.
And so they're
– They are important.
We're definitely working on that.
Because you're listing – is you've done what you need to do to stand out in a crowd, but you're like no guest wants to be the first to the party.
Mm-hmm.
They also, if you're still in launch phase pricing, we're trying to kind of entice them to book, but also what we're doing when we have a really nice property that doesn't seem priced appropriately, like a consumer expects the nicest properties to be more expensive, right? And a lot of times people don't realize that the pricing is such a major marketing tool. The consumer is, and a lot of times we're like, well, we're still in launch phase pricing. We're still kind of trying to get those first guests coming in. You could be keeping the price suppressed too low, too long, because you will also have consumers that will start to naturally just say, what's wrong with that if it's that nice and it's that price, yeah. Right? And so there's a lot of times where you want to test at certain points higher prices than normal, because that makes more sense to a consumer when they can see that it's a different type of a property. Mm. And your guys' property is different. It is, consumers pay for different, personalized, unique, right? That's what they will pay more for. And if they see different, unique, personalized experiences and they're not charging more, they wonder what's wrong. Mm. And so that could be part of our, like, and I know this is a, podcast isn't a coaching session,
yeah, yeah.
but we want to, like, it's also good for people to hear that too and say, okay, I'm always thinking, okay, where are we at with, performance, launch, everything else. And I've seen the listing. I know the listing's good. I haven't paid attention to the pricing too close. And so we need to look at that. And it could be your price too low right now. Yeah. And it actually, you might just say, hey, listen, we just need to raise our price. And all of a sudden your performance skyrockets. Seems crazy, right? Seems like
it does.
Counterintuitive.
It seems counterintuitive. It happens all the time. And so those of you that are listening, if you've got a property that you know is a really good property, you know that it's marketed well, you know that it presents itself well, and you're priced where the market is or trying to be below the market, sometimes that hurts you because the consumer will just automatically discount it saying, I don't think that's right. Like yeah. I was looking at a four-wheeler yesterday, and I was looking at, on KSL. You guys know KSL because our local classified section. And I was on KSL looking at a four-wheeler, and I'm looking at buying a four-wheeler. I know the basic prices of what I'm going to be buying. And all of a sudden this one-year-old four-wheeler came up, and the four-wheelers are somewhere around that $10,000 mark. Well, this four-wheeler was listed for $3,500. And immediately what I thought was, it's a scam. It's not even a real listing. It's a scam, right? And so I didn't call on it. I didn't do anything because I knew that it was too nice for the price it was listed, and I moved on.
Yeah.
Consumers do that with our short-term rentals as well. And so that's kind of a dramatic example of, from $10,000 to $3,500. I know you're not that big of a difference, but even if you're in the middle of a market, you guys probably are in a position to raise prices at this stage in the game, especially where you've got the 8 reviews. I'd like to see you get that 10 to 15. Mm-hmm. Are they all 5-star?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you're already, what we need to do is train that algorithm that, hey, listen, we're going to book a little bit higher, make a little bit more money. And I think that you'll find that probably is just a tweak that you can make and get more bookings right away.
Yeah. And the nice thing is, again, a plug for a good property manager, right? Like we've had experience with 3 down there, yes, in our short time. And we have been talking pricing with our current property manager. And the great thing is that he takes our advice and he'll do whatever we want, right? And he has his own advice, but also he is very familiar with Vodacy as well. Yeah. And so he, does, having that good relationship with your property manager is essential in some of these conversations, because it's counterintuitive, like we said, right? Like, hey, we're going to do this. I know it seems counterintuitive, but here's the plan. And being able to take that advice and being, I guess, humble enough to be like, not be like, oh, I do this for a living.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Like, hey, we're all trying to make money on the property, right?
Yeah.
Property manager is as well. And there's so many times where ego gets in the way. And it's like, this is how I do it. This is the way that it works. Instead of just saying, hey, let's test it. If it doesn't work, it doesn't work. There's things that we can test. There's things that we want to do. And it's so nice. I always say that and property management is the Achilles heel of the business. You guys have gone through 3. You understand why I say that, right?
Yeah.
It's not as easy to have everybody on the same page when it comes to the management and delivery of the experience and the delivery of the marketing. And so it is nice when you find one that is willing to work together to try to maximize the property. That's all we're trying to do, right? Yep. And some of these big national brands or the really big companies, to be honest, it would be really difficult for them to try to maximize each individual property. So they just have to have standard operating procedures. So there's nothing against the way that they're doing business. It just doesn't work for us as investors a lot of times when you're dealing with the big companies with big portfolios, because they're not interested in maximizing each individual asset. They're just interested in maximizing their revenue across an entire portfolio,
right. Yep.
Which means just trying to get your fair share of business and keep adding properties to the portfolio, right?
Yeah.
And so trying to find that and finding one that you have that is willing to make the changes, willing to go through these adjustments and iterations through that first year of launching is really, really refreshing, especially when you've experienced the opposite. Right. So it makes it kind of nice. Who's the property manager? Let's give him a shout out.
It's Red Sands.
Nice. Yeah. Good. Yeah. Red Sands is good reputation down there. We like them. And and it is nice. We know the guys at Red Sands and we know his wife, who is an agent that we work with, Miss Holly Buck, right?
Yep, absolutely. Yeah, we used her as well.
Yeah. So we'll shout out to both of them. So it's awesome when we can work with people that are all on the same page, right? So awesome. So this part of the conversation, lessons learned. If you go back and say, if we're doing it again, which we're going to be doing property number two, what are we going to do different? What are some of the things that we're going to make adjustments on? Anything that comes to mind right out of the gate?
Yeah, I'll let you go first.
Yeah, we've learned a lot. I think it's important to kind of be agile and flexible. We realized that, like, even though Vodacy has a blueprint, has like a, you know, a map for you to follow, that like, it's not going to be linear, right? Yes. Like it's not going to be the exact same for every person who comes into Vodacy, right?
Yeah.
Different markets, different property types, different goals. And so, you know, although, it's like the guide is invaluable, mm-hmm. right? But you still have to be willing to put your time in, and to learn, and when things go wrong, just be ready to kind of shift, pivot. Don't get discouraged, right? Because things, even having the blueprint, things are gonna challenge. You're gonna face challenges, right? And so, just being ready for that, being ready to put in the time, that's what I would say.
Awesome.
Yeah, we were talking about this yesterday because we knew that the question was coming. Yeah. We listened to every podcast, and really, it's be ready to invest the time. That was mine. Was like, look, this is going to take a while. Like we said last year, it felt like we had two full time jobs. Right, yeah. It was demanding, but it was super satisfying. Right, when we got it all done, we looked at it and we said, look what we did. Right, yeah. And we got compliments from the community. We got compliments from our family. We got compliments from property managers, right? And that was the part for me that was like, hey, I can do this, right? Like, I may not be 100% satisfied working my W-2 for the next 25, 30 years, but I've got this other project on the side that is like, you know what? I had a bad day at work. That's fine. I'm moving on to my second job, quote unquote. Yeah. And that's giving me satisfaction, and I can keep doing this and building this on the side, right? Yeah. And so the your mantra of, you know, no one's coming to save you, go and do something every day, that was that for me, right? Where it's like, I might be discouraged over here for the thing that's paying the bills, but I'm building something over here on the side, and that was just invaluable for me and my mental, like, I can do this, right?
Yeah, so. And it goes back to the, like I always say, the cowboy way, right? Because I like cowboys, right?
Yeah.
And so, but it's that personal responsibility, self-reliance, like extreme ownership, and saying, hey, listen, and it's not always choosing the easy path. It's saying, hey, listen, I'm going to have choices all through my life, and I'm going to talk about buying a short-term rental for a long time, or I'm actually going to do it, and I'm going to show, you know, my kids and my family and myself that, hey, listen, I ran down this road. You know, we talked about this, but we didn't just sit and talk about it. Now, all of a sudden, we're living as an example, and it wasn't always easy. And it's not always, you know, I'm not choosing the easy path. And the easy path is usually, in my opinion, leads to a hard road down the line. The hard path in the very beginning leads to an easier road down the line. But also, it's because, I mean, when you start to look back and say, look what we just did, right? And it's that boost of confidence, and it's that, you know, the feeling of like, holy crap, we can do this again. We did this once. We can do it again. We keep building. And then 10 years from now, you look back and you're like, man, can you believe what we did? You guys are sitting on, you know, you're watching your kids grow up. You're sitting at the high school games now instead of watching them this big, right?
And then that's right.
You guys are like, man, look what we did together. And Jason, what you were saying is just the as well laid plan as we can try to make, as much as we can make the blueprint as step by step, as paint by numbers as possible, there's always sticking points. There's always iterations. There's always going to be something that comes up. And that's why we always say, when people say, you know, with Vodacy as a three-legged stool, is you got the blueprint, you got the coaching, which you guys can dive into, right? You're like, hey, Mike has his trainings on design and everything, but I needed to jump on the design calls and talk to somebody, right? And then we have that community too. And that's where you talk to people who have made the iterations, and you've talked to somebody that went through that, and you're like, yeah, this is what happened to me during that phase or that part of the process and that blueprint. And so having all of it together and being willing to make the iterations and being willing to make the adjustments and realizing that there's no plan that's laid out perfect, or it's really hard to execute a perfect plan, right?
You
can have all the plans in the world, like, you know, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the face, right? What Mike Tyson says, right? And then all of a sudden you got to make some adjustments. And that's what happens when we're going through this, right?
Yeah.
We're
going
to get punched in the face a couple times, and we have to make those adjustments.
Yeah, and the other biggest thing, just as you were talking, I remembered, the other biggest thing that we discussed as we were preparing for the podcast was patience.
Yeah.
Right. Oh, we want to see results like fast. Immediately, you know. We're like, we're doing all this work, we want to see it. And we've really needed to learn to be patient and to just trust the process.
That
the process is gonna work. And the whole community, there's just, you know, and countless numbers of people in the community who have had success with it. So we just need to, you know, have the patience to see it through.
And balancing that patience with, you know, like not feeling like you're doing anything, right? Like I do stuff. I go do and do stuff and check things off the list, right?
Yeah.
But sometimes you just have to be patient and just let it wait.
Right now, especially, that's what you guys are learning right now. Because you know, in that acquisition phase, in the setup phase, while you're getting everything ready to launch it, you're doing stuff the whole time. Yeah. So you're
that's right.
You know, you're spending time, you're going. All of a sudden now it's like, okay, now I don't really have a lot to do right now, right? Yeah. There's a couple of things I can make some suggestions, but I just have to now let it start to play out. Yeah. And that is hard, especially when you come off of this very time intensive, you know, setup phase and everything else, and all of a sudden you're like,
okay, now what?
What do I do now? Right?
It's a little uncomfortable.
Like I want to do something now, right? And so I always tell people it's a funny game because it's very time intensive on the front end. And because everybody's like, I don't know if I have time for this. And maybe you do, maybe you don't on the front end. But after you get it set up and launched, then it's more of a game of, okay, I got to let this play out and see how it's working. I'm gonna need to make some adjustments along the way. But I have to, every adjustment I make, I have to wait another month or so to see how it worked, right? And so it's really, it's a hard part of the process for sure. I know exactly what you're going through because you want to be doing something right now, right?
Yep.
And right now is not the time where you're doing a whole lot. You're saying, okay, we need to get it performing. That first year, you're still making adjustments. Wait till the second and third year. You're looking at P&Ls and the calendar when you want to use it.
That's right.
And that's when it gets fun because then you go to property number two and then you get back in action. So, guys, this has been a fun conversation for me. I appreciate you coming up in person, making the hour drive, and being able to be in the studio in person is really fun. And so I always appreciate you guys sharing the story, letting people listen in. And, you know, and just being really honest about it, right? We don't always, like before the show, I don't tell you things to not talk about, right?
Yeah.
We say, hey, listen, we're here to share the good, the bad, the ugly, the journey, the hard times, because the hard times make us really appreciate the good times. And I'm proud of you both from coming in and actually making this happen for yourselves and your family. And, you know, I've met both of your wives and super excited for you guys and what you're building and everything we can do to help you do that. So appreciate you coming in. Those of you that are listening, we appreciate you spending your time with us as well. I know you like these shows and you guys get out of them as much as I do because you tell us all the time. And so appreciate you doing that and spending that time with us. If you have more than 30 seconds, like it or review it on whatever podcast you're watching or listening on. And if you have somebody that would like to be a part of these conversations, we don't run ads on the show. So if you can share it, those things help us a lot. And we very, very much appreciate it. And the final, most important thing I ask you at the end of every episode, pick that one thing you can do today, start building that life you don't want to take a vacation from. Cheers, my friends.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of the Vacation Rental Revolution podcast. Share this with other people you think need to hear about it. And don't forget to subscribe and leave us a review. Hey Grace, is there a website? Yes! For more amazing content and expert advice, visit Bodyssey.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you on the next episode.